All right, welcome back to our Kings of Israel and Judah. We are on Athaliah and Joash this week on the Judah side. So if you have your chart, your Bible insert there, we're on the Judah side. Make sure you're on that side because there's a Joash on the other side. So don't write in that spot. We're going to be looking at Athaliah, who's actually a queen. That's why I've got her in parentheses there, or marked off somehow. And then her grandson, Joash, who became king. Kids, does anybody know how old Joash was when he became king? Grown-ups, does anybody know? Quentin? 8 is close. Josiah was 8. 14, nope, younger. Younger than 8, actually. Older than 5. We're getting closer. 7. I've got Jack's guy giving me a 7. Yes, 7 years old. So let's see, who's... Let's see, where's Braylon? Okay, but she's 7. So Braylon's age. All right, so Braylon's age is when Joash became king. So some unusual cases going on here today. Athaliah, the only queen who ever reigned by herself over the nation of Judah, and then the youngest king ever to reign over the people of Judah. Now, I said last time we were kind of done with the whole family of the family of Ahab and Jezebel, but we're not quite done. So I'm going to put this family tree on the board again here that we've had over the last few weeks. I think it's helpful to keep in mind what's going on here, because you remember Athaliah was part of that family. Okay, so we have Israel over here, and we have Judah over here. Okay, on the Israel side, we have Ahab. Is Ahab a good king or a bad king? Bad, right? Boo Ahab. We don't like Ahab. Then what was Ahab's wife's name? Jezebel, that's right, okay? Is Jezebel a good queen or a bad queen? Very bad, right? Okay, and then they had some kids we've been talking about. First one, so we've had, I gotta make sure I get my name straight here because there's a couple of each, I'm checking myself here. The first one who was king was Ahaziah, and then he died and his brother Jehoram, became king, and their sister's name was Athaliah. Okay, so those are all kids of the same family, right? Now, over here, we had Jehoshaphat, and his son's name was Joram as well, or Jehoram. And you remember, they made a marriage alliance. This is the root of a lot of the problems we've been dealing with. They made this a marriage alliance, so Athaliah, daughter of this family, married Joram over here. And then their son, what do we say?
Or Jehoram,
yes. Okay, I'm going to be saying Joram, but when I say Joram, I mean either Joram or Jehoram. That's right. Okay, then they had a son named Ahaziah, named after his uncle. It might be named after his uncle here. And that's kind of as far as we've looked at this. Last time we saw Jehu come into this mix, right? So here's Jehu, who's not part of this family, but he comes in and just sort of blows everything up. So there's a sort of, everything gets blown up when Jehu comes along and eliminates this family. So Ahab was already dead. Ahaziah was already dead. Jehu comes in, kills Joram, kills Jezebel. And this family is starting to be destroyed here. But if you remember, the last remaining, the surviving family member here is Athaliah herself. And she's the queen mother. So at this point, Joram is already dead. Jehoshaphat and Joram are dead. Ahaziah, when Jehu comes in, he kills Ahaziah at the same time as Joram. Remember that episode where Jehu comes in to confront Joram? Ahaziah has come to visit his uncle, and they both get killed in the process. And so there's just been this huge destruction. Just about everybody's dead here, it seems like. And there's just a big cavity, big gaping hole in the royal families. So what we're going to be looking at today is, what does Athaliah do with this situation? Because what we have over here, Ahaziah had a bunch of sons, including a baby named Joash, who's just an infant over here. So he's got a son over here, a few more sons. We don't know their names. But he had other sons over here that were grandsons of Athaliah. I'll just say Athaliah is not someone you want to have be your grandmother. This is not a good
episode in the life of that family. If you'd like to turn in your Bibles, turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 22. 2 Chronicles 22 is where we see a lot of this. The stories of Athaliah and Joash are all sort of tangled up together, as you'll see. But Athaliah reigned for 6 years, and you see verse 10 of 2 Chronicles 22. Now, when Athaliah, the mother of Ahaziah, here we go, we got Athaliah, mother of Ahaziah, when she saw that her son was dead, what did she do? Or what do most people do when family members die?
Mourn
and grieve, right? What did Athaliah do? Killed everybody. Athaliah comes along, she sees her son is dead, she sees an opportunity to take power for herself, and she starts killing her grandsons. And just comes along and starts wiping out her own family, her own descendants, to try to take power for herself. So in comes, so we've got to expand this family tree a little bit. Ahaziah had a sister whose name was Jehosheba. Or she's called Jehoshabea, I think, in one of these accounts. Make sure I've got this right for her name. Yes, Jehosheba, who was married to Jehoiada the priest. And that will come up here in a minute. So Athaliah is starting to kill all her sons. Now, I do think it's valuable to pause here to think about Athaliah and what she's doing here. Athaliah had a difficult past, to say the least. Athaliah is kind of a classic example where if we were to look at it in sort of our modern psychoanalytical way of looking at things, she could definitely be the product of a really rocky, messy family history and traumas in her life. We see her married off by her parents in political marriage to Joram, sent off away from her home kingdom to marry this man. Having been raised by Ahab and Jezebel couldn't have been a pleasant process. She, at one point, when we were back looking at the reign of Joram, you may remember at one point all of his sons and wives, maybe Athaliah involved there, I'm not sure, she was spared for some reason, but all of his other wives at least, and most of their sons were killed, were taken off by the Philistines and Arabians. And it was only their youngest son, Ahaziah, who survived. So there'd been all these older sons of hers. She's had a bunch of her kids killed as children, and only the youngest survived and saw her rival wives carried off. Somehow survived that, but it had been a traumatizing thing. And then her youngest son finally becomes king, and he only reigns for a year because in the very same day, her son Ahaziah, her brother Joram, and her mother Jezebel are all killed, and everybody else that's associated with her family, everybody else she's ever been connected with, because everybody connected with Ahab was killed that day. And so she saw all of this happen. She's been through all of these horrific things. And we don't want to take away from that at all. That was real suffering that she experienced, but it doesn't excuse anything that she did as a result. She went through a lot of really terrible things, but there's no excuse for the way that she acted towards her family, trying to take power for herself and killing her grandsons. So she went ahead and killed, as soon as she saw the chance, killed her grandsons. The only reason Joash survived is that his aunt, Jehosheba, took him and his nurse. And where did she take him? Does anybody remember this story? Where did she take baby Joash? To the temple, because she was married to the high priest, or to the priest Jehoiada. And so she was able to use her connections to hide Joash, this baby, this one last surviving baby, to hide him in the temple so that he wouldn't be killed. So she didn't know that he'd survived. As far as she knew, she had succeeded, but this whole family was eliminated and it was just her left. And so she got to be queen. And she reigned for 6 years. And we don't really know anything more about her reign during that time. We don't know what it was like, if she had to fight with enemies or anything like that. But there was no king. Yes?
Is she trying to rule over Israel and Judah?
No, good question. So she wasn't trying to reign over Israel because Jehu had effectively taken over. She's sort of over here. She was ruling in Judah. Jehu had just eliminated her whole family and was in power up in Israel. But she took the power in Judah.
But it was a time of great upheaval. There were a lot of this family had been killed. All of this family had been killed except for her. And so she filled the void over here. Jehu filled the void over here. He created the void and then filled it on the Israel side. So she reigned for 6 years. We don't know, again, a whole lot about that reign. But eventually, as we'll see now that we get to Joash, she was put to death by her own people for being an illegitimate ruler and for what she'd done to her grandsons. And her grandson, who survived, that she didn't know about, was put on the throne in her place. So she, we'll see more about that, her death here in just a moment. This is a woman who had had a wicked influence on several generations. It's mentioned in the reign of Joram that she led him astray because she was from this family of Ahab and Jezebel. It's said during the reign of Ahaziah that she was guiding him into wickedness that whole time. And then when it comes to the next generation, the third generation, not only did she wasn't just leading them astray, she was killing them all. So this is a wicked woman who had served herself and destroyed several generations, first with her advice and later on literally killing them. So that's a summary of Athaliah. Under the enemy's spot there, I don't really have any nations to put down. You can put down her own grandsons if you want, but she regarded as her enemies. We don't know about any other enemies that she fought. So then we come to Joash himself, just a baby, about maybe a year old, when his life was saved. He reigned from 835 to 796 BC. Did I give you the years on Athaliah? Athaliah was 841 to 835 BC, if I didn't give those. 841 to 835. Joash had a long reign, reigned for 40 years. 2 Kings 12 verse 1 tells us that, 40 years, 835 to 796 BC. And if you stay there in 2 Chronicles 22, from there forward to through chapter 24, we have lots of information on Joash. So as we look at Joash, I want to sort of break down his life into three main sections. First, he reigned for longer than his grandma, which is a good thing most of that time. That's right. So we're going to look at his life and kingship saved. That's the first thing. Then we'll look at him repairing the temple. Then we'll look at his fall late in his reign. So first we'll look at his life and his kingship being saved. I've already given you some of this background. That his aunt spared his life, saved him, and brought him into the temple. And Jehoiada the priest was looking after him. By the time Joash was seven, 6 years later, Jehoiada, for some reason, knew that it was the right time to make Joash the king. I don't know about you, but I'm not sure I would have thought a seven-year-old was old enough to be king. But I think it had more to do with the kind of support that Jehoiada was able to rally to surround this king. Because if we won't read through the whole story there, but if you look at chapter 23, you see Jehoiada the priest here working hard to coordinate this crowning of this new king. So he knows, he's a believer, he's someone who trusts the Lord, he knows Athaliah doesn't belong on the throne, he knows he's got the right heir to the throne, and so he starts working and organizing things so that they can crown Joash king and get rid of this illegitimate ruler. And so he coordinates with the Levites, because that's who he had a say over as priests, right? He had the Levites helping him out, and they had weapons available to them. And so he organized them, and he got one shift to stay on when the other shift was coming on, so they'd have twice as many guys. And he worked it all out so that they would surround the court of the temple, and then they brought out Joash. And they were willing to make public this heir to the throne. And they brought out Joash, and in verse 11, 2 Chronicles 23, verse 11, it says, "Then they brought out the king's son and put the crown on him and gave him the testimony." What's the testimony? Does anybody know what they mean by that? The law of God. It's a copy of the law of God. Gave him the crown and the testimony, and they proclaimed him king, and Jehoiada and his sons anointed him, and they said, "Long live the king." And so here's this rightful king being reestablished to the reign that he deserved. Now, the testimony is really important. And it's been a while since we talked about this. But if you remember, at one point, we talked about how back in the days of Moses, God told them, you can have a king someday, but what does the king have to do? God says the king has to do something. Andrea? Yes, Deuteronomy 17, the kings of Israel were required to copy out their own copy of the law. We don't have any record of that actually happening, but at least in this case, it's clear they know the king of God's people needs to be a king of righteousness who upholds the law of God, not his own opinions,
Not the self-serving queen that we had who's willing to kill her own grandsons for her own gains, but a man who, even though he's 7 years old, has the law of God in his hand. And that's a really key part of the kingship of God's people. What does Athaliah think of this when she hears the commotion? Anybody remember what she screams? Treason, right? Of all people to talk about treason. Someone who tried to kill the rightful heirs to the throne. She shouts treason.
Can I interject something right there?
Sure.
Okay. High school class. This is an example of judging righteously that we're commanded to do in Scripture, not hypocrisy. And she's being hypocritical in her crying treason. Understand that?
Yep. Yes, such hypocrisy there. But Jehoiada knew the rightful heir to the throne, and so he wasn't scared off by that. Verse 14, then Jehoiada the priest brought out the captains who were set over the army, saying to them, bring her out between the ranks, and anyone who follows her is to be put to death with the sword. For the priest said, do not put her to death in the house of the Lord. So they laid hands on her, and she went into the entrance of the horse gate of the king's house, and they put her to death there. And then in verse 21, if you skip down a few verses, it says, so all the people of the land rejoiced, and the city was quiet after Athaliah had been put to death with the sword. There's that picture of peace. When a wicked ruler is taken out, that there's quiet for the people of God. And that is, it's just a hint that we don't know anything about what was going on during Athaliah's reign, but we know it wasn't quiet. Because we're told it was quiet after she was gone. And there was a time of turmoil in the people of God while there was the wrong person on the throne. So that it's quite a dramatic start for Joash. He's the youngest king. There's this big to-do when he's made king. And for a while, he did pretty well. He had Jehoiada, the priest, his uncle, advising him. And he did really well for a while. And one of the biggest things he did, then the next kind of part of his life, was his repairing of the temple. And we're told that he did well while Jehoiada was influencing him. And he worked at building up the temple, repairing the things that had broken down. And at one point, the Levites, who were supposed to be collecting the census tax so that they would have money to build the temple or repair the temple, weren't doing their job. And so Joash says, why aren't you guys doing your job? We're going to do this a different way. He sticks a money box at the temple and then puts out a decree and says, everybody needs to come and bring the tax that you're supposed to and bring offerings. And the people gladly do it. The Levites weren't doing their job to collect it from everybody. And so Joash says, all right, we're going to do this a different way. You just come and put the money in the box. And it kept getting filled up and filled up and filled up. And they took the resources that were being put in that box and they repaired the temple. And they restored the utensils and all the different things that had broken down during the reigns of Joram and Ahaziah. And so the regular sacrifices were restored. And you see good things for God's people. There's a ray of light here with Athaliah out of the picture, Joash is doing well, the rightful kingship has been restored, and it was really a good time while Jehoiada was still living. But then we come to Joash's fall. And Joash, unfortunately, was only doing well as long as Jehoiada was around. So the priest was helping him and guiding him, but then he died. Joash, chapter 24, verse 17, 2 Chronicles 24, 17, it says, now after the death of Jehoiada, the princes of Judah came and paid homage to the king. Then the king listened to them, and they abandoned the house of the Lord. So here's this man who's been given so much, and Joash has been helped so much by the priests of the Lord, by the faithfulness of God's people. But when he loses that good influence in his life, these young guys, these princes of Judah, come along and advise him the wrong way. And they abandoned the house of the Lord, the God of their fathers, and served the Asherim and the idols. And wrath came upon Judah and Jerusalem for this guilt of theirs. And it's just heartbreaking. This is where you're reading through the history of these kings, and we keep seeing this again and again, where the good ones aren't good enough. And he's not a particularly good one. He did well for a while, but there's this aching that you feel in your heart for the need for a good king. Because you have a pretty good run for a while, and he still screws it up. And we need Jesus. And that should be, as you read through the Old Testament, you see that failure, you think, this isn't good enough. We need something better. We need Jesus himself. We need the true Son of David. Because he goes way off the deep end here at the end. He starts worshiping these false gods. And the Lord sent him all kinds of prophets. In fact, at the end of his reign, where does it say it? I think it might have been in the king's account. Or no. But at the end of chapter 24, verse 27, accounts of his sons and of the many oracles against him and of the rebuilding of the house of God are written in the story of the book of the Kings. The many oracles against him. Here he is, he went off the deep end, and the Lord sent him all these prophets to tell him that he was doing the wrong thing and he wouldn't listen to them. And the worst example, I'm going to add one more person to this family tree, was a man named Zechariah, who was the son of Jehoiada and Jehoshaphat, who would have been Joash's first cousin, and the son of the woman who saved his life, and the man who made him king. And the Lord sent Zechariah to prophesy against Joash for what he was doing, to tell him, this is wrong what you are doing, you are not faithful to the Lord your God, you need to stop. And what did Joash do? He killed him. And it's one of the great treacheries in the Bible.
What was that in the temple?
And it was in the temple, to make it worse. So if you look at verse 21, but they conspired against him, and by command of the king, they stoned him with stones in the court of the house of the Lord. Think about what had just happened in the court of that house when Joash was 7 years old. That's the very place where Jehoiada had surrounded Joash with soldiers, with armed men to protect his life, to make him the king. And in that very same court, Joash orders the murder of Jehoiada's son, Zechariah.
His cousin.
Yep. So it was his cousin, Zechariah. And this is mentioned later on in Jesus' ministry, actually, when Jesus is talking to them about that corrupt generation in his day. And it says, this is Luke 11:49-51. Therefore also the wisdom of God said, I will send them prophets and apostles, some of whom they will kill and persecute, so that the blood of all the prophets shed from the foundation of the world may be charged against this generation, from the blood of Abel to the blood of Zechariah, who perished between the altar and the sanctuary. Yes, I tell you, it will be required of this generation. And this, if you go with the Hebrew order of the books, this is sort of trivia, but if you go with the Hebrew order of the books, Zechariah, 2 Chronicles is the last book in the Hebrew Old Testament. And Zechariah here is the last prophet killed, mentioned, that last murder of a prophet in the whole Testament. So when it says the blood of Abel is the blood of Zechariah, that's one possibility that's what it's talking about. But it's one of the great treacheries in Scripture. And it's just heartbreaking. You know, you just see everything that Joash was given. And it's a reminder to us of how much we've been given and how easy it is for us to turn on our own Lord. Joash was condemned for this, for what he had done. He was judged by Syria attacking them. So if under enemies, you can put down Syria. He was fighting against Syria. He had to end up paying off Hazael, the king of Syria, with basically every bit of gold he had to get him to go away. He was wounded in that war with Syria. And then his servants, one of whom was an Ammonite, one of whom was a Moabite, assassinated him because of what he'd done to Zechariah. So some of his servants saw what had happened, and they went ahead and killed him in his bed, it says. And he was assassinated. And he's buried in Jerusalem, but not in the tombs of the kings. So the people recognized that he wasn't somebody worth burying along with David and the other good kings. So Joash is a tough one. We usually tell the first part of the story. We tell kids that great Bible story about the boy king, and he's 7 years old, and it's a good story. It's wonderful what happens early in his life. We got to tell the whole story too sometimes. He was saved by family, he was rightful king, who was restored. He was only faithful as long as he had good influences around him, and he ended up betraying his own family who'd saved him. So again, under enemies, you can put Syria, you can put Athaliah, his own grandmother, under there if you want. And then it's interesting, I don't know if you'd put it under enemies, but Ammonite, he had an Ammonite and a Moabite that killed him, and we've talked to him about Ammon and Moab before. So that's Joash. In terms of some archaeology to look at today, sort of an interesting case today of what's called the Jehoash inscription. And this is a piece of carved rock with writing all across it. It's purportedly written by the king who was the son of Ahaziah. The name of the king is broken off, but it's the son of Ahaziah, who restored the temple. And he talks about the things that he did to restore the temple. And he talks about various things that he did to restore the temple. It says, he executed repairs when men's hearts became replete with generosity in the land and in all the cities of Judah to donate money for the sacred contributions abundantly in order to purchase quarry stone and juniper wood and Edomite copper and so on. And he talks about how he renovated the temple. And so this was discovered a few years ago, and everybody says, great, this is clearly it's Joash. It had some interesting, there were some traces of gold left on it that it seemed like it had some gold on it originally that was destroyed by fire, which would fit it being around the temple when it was destroyed by fire. And it's a very interesting piece, and people are really excited about it. But we didn't know where it had come from. This is one of these ones that just surfaces on the antiquities market. They didn't know where it had been dug up. And immediately when it was first released, some of the linguists, the philologists, and people looking at it said, hang on, we've got some problems here. This looks a little fishy. And they started looking and they pointed out a whole list of there's 12 or more problems with the grammar and some of the vocabulary. There's a slight difference in the script, the form of the script and what it should have been at the time. And no one of them alone makes it absolutely sure that this is not real. But the Israel Antiquities Authority ended up saying that this is a forgery. It came from the collection of a man named Oded Golan. I'm not sure how to pronounce his name, but he is the same one who produced the James Ossuary, which was it appeared a few years ago, which is a bone box that supposedly contained the bones of James, the son of Joseph, brother of Jesus. And it was a big stir when it came out, but it also has been called into great question. There's some problems with the way that the script shows up on the box and things like that. And so it's another one that showed up in the antiquities market from the collection of this guy, and anything he touches is kind of suspect these days. But it shows us one of the difficult things about biblical archaeology is that people know that if they find something that connects to the Bible, it will be worth a ton of money. That's just the reality of it. And so similarly, you may have heard that the Museum of the Bible in Washington, D.C. recently found out that all of its Dead Sea Scroll fragments that they had turned out to all be forgeries. Because someone knows that they can make a lot of money if they sell things that are connected to the Bible. And so they work really hard. And the forging process is fascinating. They have to find ancient papyrus and use it to make it. And they had to source this stone from the right place and those kinds of things. But it really, there are still people who argue that this is genuine. But we have to be really careful on these things and not just jump at things and not appear gullible just because we want it to be true. We don't need archaeology to affirm the Bible. It's great when it affirms it. But especially when there's a problem where we don't know the provenance, we don't know where it came from, we need to be really careful to jump to saying, yes, this is it. This is such great proof of the Bible. Because we may end up looking foolish in the end if we're not being careful about these things. So we just gotta watch when there are these new discoveries that affirm the Bible. It's a great thing, and there are so many things that are true that affirm the Bible. We don't need fakes. We don't need forgeries like this. Thinking about some takeaways for today. I mentioned this last time, I think, but when you think about what was going on here and how many people in this line of David were killed, we got down to just one baby in the line of David who was left, one rightful heir who was left. And everybody thought he was dead for 6 years. And that's how delicate it got, but the Lord still preserved the line of David. And that's a wonderful reminder of God's faithfulness in preserving the line of Christ. And despite all the attempts of the serpent to crush the line of the seed of the woman, that God preserved that line. And that's a really wonderful reminder of God's faithfulness. It's also a reminder as we look at this story that there are going to be times when someone tries to take the crown of Jesus for themselves in a way they shouldn't, and we have to stand against that, sometimes even taking up arms. And that's our heritage as covenanters, that there are times when someone tries to take the authority that is rightfully Jesus's, whether it's over the church or usurping civil authority or something like that, where we have to take a stand and we have to say, no, we're not gonna allow someone else to take Christ's crown. And that's something we need to keep in mind. I would also encourage you to stop and think, especially you young people, you have lots of positive influences in your life right now in the church. You have older people guiding you, and maybe it's your parents, maybe it's other people in this church. But the question is, do you really believe these things and do these things because you believe them and because you're doing it for the Lord yourself? Because there's a lot of us that while we have props around under us and we have people around us that will do the right thing. But when it comes down to it, when you're by yourself, when you're with your friends who aren't believers, when you're whatever, when you get somewhere else, you move to another city, are you going to stand with the Lord? Because at the end of the day, it's about you and the Lord. It's not about whether your parents believe or what somebody else believes. And it's sobering. Again, this is a story that shows you how far someone can fall when they don't have true faith. And then it also made me think about how often people that we might have trusted in a great way, and people who are even in leadership, you can think of people in your life. I've talked before about my pastor when I was little who has denied the faith. I mean, think about people who have let you down, who you thought so highly of, and people can and will let you down. But that's what it is. Again, it's so good that we have King Jesus, because he will never change. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He is perfectly righteous, and he is not going to change at the end of his life to start being unfaithful and murdering his family like Joash did. We have a good king who's the same yesterday, today, and forever. How good that is. Better than any king before him. That's Athaliah and Joash. Any questions today?
How did Athaliah stay alive for all that?
How did Athaliah, the queen? Well, she had to kill other people to keep herself alive, because she was fighting to save her own skin. She was being selfish, and so she killed other people to try to keep them from taking her off the throne. Yep, it's pretty terrible. All right, let's go ahead and close.